Hello and welcome to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. And this week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat to discuss the latest developments at Lufthansa and the state of play at the big US carriers. Hi, Jay, how's it going?
I'm good, Gordon. How's it going today?
Going very, very well. We've got a double-pronged episode today, straddling both sides of the Atlantic, starting off with Lufthansa, then pivoting across to the US. And Lufthansa, it's easy to consider it as the sort of slightly interesting conglomerate. It does a bit of MRO. It's got some cargo. It's got loads of different flag carriers. It really matters, though, in the European aviation landscape and in the international aviation landscape. They had the earnings out a few days ago. We're recording now on Wednesday afternoon my time, Wednesday morning your time. Talk us through the top line figures, Jay. We will go into some of the details with the various airlines in a moment, but what was your top line take?
Sure, we'll give some numbers. Lufthansa Group was the last and final of Europe's big three to announce their results. That was last week, as we're talking today, as you mentioned. It's here Wednesday, March 13th. And the very, very kind of most important number, I guess, is the 7.6%. And that was their operating margin for the entire group, the Lufthansa Group. And as you just mentioned, Gordon, Lufthansa is a bit of an empire. They have various airlines. They have, as you mentioned, a giant maintenance unit, actually, big cargo unit. They have a catering unit, do some other activities here and there. But 7.6%, relatively speaking, that was better than Air France's 5.7%, but worse than IAG's 11.9%. And this is no different than we've seen, you know, pick your year, whether it be 2019 before the pandemic or, you know, 2022 or whatever year. That's pretty much been the case where Lufthansa is right in the middle between Air France and IAG. And I just wanted to also mention one other comparison here. So 7.6% happens to be exactly what American Airlines did. If you recall last week's podcast, we talked about them a little bit. And we talked about them in the context of, you know, just them having a rough time and, you know, that their earnings have been disappointing and, you know, it's particularly relative to Delta and United. And so keep that in mind that Lufthansa is actually doing no better than that. They're in some sense in a little bit of a better position than American. We can, you know, sort of maybe get into why, but kind of on the same playing field there. So there are your headline numbers, if you will.
I appreciate that, Jay. So if you are only interested in the headline numbers, you can switch off now. Just joking.
Stay with us.
Plenty more to come. Let's look at the airlines in a bit more detail, because as we said at the very start of the show, it is an enormous, sprawling, massive a company. Ignore Lufthansa Cargo, ignore Lufthansa Technik and all the other subsidiaries. Let's look purely at the airlines. We've got Lufthansa Mainline, Swiss, Austrian, Brussels, Eurowings, and then we go into the regional stuff, Cityline, the new City Airlines, Air Dolomiti, Edelweiss, Discover, never mind the equity investment in Sun Express. That's the joint venture with Turkish Airlines. There's so much to pick apart here, Jay. Let's try, if we can, and just look at some of the big themes from the individual airlines. Let's look at Lufthansa Mainline to begin with. Anything of interest there that our listeners should know about?
Sure, a lot of interest. I like to say that Lufthansa has a Lufthansa problem. And what I mean by that is that the group as a whole would be doing much better if not for the Lufthansa-branded mainline carrier. Its margin was just 5% in 2023. And I hope I didn't neglect to mention that when I was talking about those numbers before, those were for full year 2023. So again, Lufthansa Group, 7.6%, but Lufthansa, the mainline carrier itself, just 5%. And keep in mind that the Lufthansa mainline is about half of the group's total revenues, a little bit less than that. I think it was like 45% in 2023. But it's, you know, if you don't get that right, you've got problems. So that's why I joke that, you know, Lufthansa has a Lufthansa problem. So why does Lufthansa have a Lufthansa problem? It's a couple of things. Now they say they give a few reasons, which I think are fair. One, they say that Lufthansa, it's a very, very corporate heavy airline, more corporate than, you know, some of their peers. And that's been the area of, you know, industry demand that's been, you know, weakest since coming out of the pandemic. And they say that's going to change, particularly when they rebuild their Asian networks, which are still, you know, they're still way down in China, way down in Japan. They say that's where a lot of the Asia is actually the most corporate heavy of their business. Now, there's questions about whether, you know, does that come back in full? I think for Japan, the answer is probably yes. China is a bigger question mark. Germany, the German economy has an interesting relationship with the Chinese economy. That's, you know, perhaps for another discussion, but they're very Germany is very reliant on Chinese demand, you know, to buy their cars and to buy their machines and whatnot. So, but that aside, a few other reasons for Lufthansa's problems as well. The Lufthansa has, if I may boldly say this, they've made a lot of fleet mistakes over the course of, you know, going back 20 years now. You know, they never did buy the Dreamliners. They never even bought 777s, which, you know, both of those planes would have worked very, very well in their networks. They still, to this day, and right before we started the podcast, I checked in the Cirium has a fleet database, and they still have, you know, 19 747s in their fleet. They have, what are they flying?
Any A340s still
there? They have A340s. I was going to get to that. They actually have more than, because I was just looking at the 747-8s. They actually have, looks like 747-4s. I don't know if those are in cargo, but in any case, they have these really geriatric aircraft that just really aren't, they're right planes to be in their fleet in 2004. You mentioned the A340s, absolutely, for sure. Those planes are essentially obsolete planes. And don't forget about the lingering A380s they still have. You know, these are four engine planes we're talking about. So they really, I think that's been a big problem. That'll correct itself over time. You know, they do have the A350s, perfectly good plane for them. They looks like they have 21-900s from what I see here. They'll get more of those. They did order the 787s. They'll get some of those. They have 777-9s coming when, you know, Boeing gets around to building them. And they're doing some modernization on the narrow body side as well. So their, you know, fleet, and I mentioned that. I mentioned the corporate heavy nature of their network. So there, you know, there you have it, a few reasons why they're underperforming. They also, I guess, just the one other thing I'll add is that they admit to this, that their premium products, if you think about their international business class, maybe a little bit out of date, and they're just now introducing a new product, which should get them back up to speed. They said, you know, once we get that going, we'll our margins will improve. But it's a little bit, you have to imagine, frustrating to not have their, you know, to not have a sort of first class or top of the line product at this time when premium first class travel is booming. So that's got to be a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, Allegris, I think, is the business class product that you're referring to there, Jay, and it looks great. You know, you look at the renders and you look at some of the grand plans for Allegris. It did get a bit of scrutiny. I don't want to go into a passenger experience rabbit hole here, but the six or seven different Allegris seats all within the same Allegris cabin, which Lufthansa, if you speak to them, they'll say, well, you know, different passengers like different things. Yeah, sure they do. But from a planning perspective, if you think you're getting a certain seat and due to whatever reason you don't get it, there's going to be a bit of tension there. So speaking to my contacts in the industry, they say it's quite a high risk strategy from Lufthansa. Yes, you're going into sort of hyper personalization, but when it comes to cabins, there's a lot to be said for standardization. No bad seats is what you want. Let's have a look at Swiss, Austrian, Brussels. Any highlights there, Jay?
Sure. So Swiss has always been the all-star. They purchased that thing when it was in distress. Some of you, you know, will recall that back in the early 2000s, there was the old Swiss Air, and they basically collapsed, and the government stepped in and set up another sort of airline based, you know, using the old Swiss Air assets, and they called it Swiss International, and then Lufthansa came in and bought it. And at the time, it was somewhat uncertain if it would, you know, how well that transaction would work for Lufthansa, and it turned out to be just an absolute slam dunk. The Swiss has done nothing but earn tremendous margins ever since. You know, very, very premium heavy airline, probably, you know, one of the most premium heavy airlines in the world, if you think about Switzerland and that market and how wealthy it is and how much corporate there is. You know, it's pretty much all good news story there.
Top of the class.
Yep. And then Swiss also has a subsidiary called Edelweiss, which, and, you know, without going into too much detail on all of these very many different brands that the Lufthansa Group has, Edelweiss is sort of the Switzerland, you know, that they use for leisure routes, long haul leisure sometimes too, but they use it. And that's done pretty well too. Well enough where Lufthansa modeled a new airline called Discover based on Edelweiss. So that's kind of, you can think of Discover as sort of the Edelweiss for Germany. And that's just getting started. But Swiss and Edelweiss, good news story. Swiss market, good news story. Austrian, more of a mixed picture. They it hasn't really performed very well since Lufthansa bought it. It's gone through a lot of restructuring. They sort of had a good moment, you know, coming out of the pandemic. I want to say, you know, 2022 into 2023, a lot of low cost competition in Austria kind of left the scene, and Austrian Airlines suddenly was making rather good margins. But they came down to earth, and by the end of the year, they closed 2023 with a 5.5% operating margin, which really isn't, you know, just a couple points higher than that 5.3 I mentioned for Lufthansa mainline. So not a, you know, I think they need to do more there. Shall I keep going?
Keep going. we've got a long list. Let's be disciplined. Let's hear about Brussels and Eurowings, if nothing else.
Sure. So Brussels was designed, Lufthansa decided to buy Brussels for really one specific strategic purpose, and that was to access more of Africa. So Brussels Airlines just happens to have a pretty strong network into some former Belgian colonies. If you think about, you know, Rwanda and a few other places, and they—that's always been, you know, rather strong. But in a sense, it's only a one-trick pony. You might think of it that way. Besides Africa, there's not really a whole lot else. I mean, they do a little bit of North America. So Brussels has been rather disappointing. They did make a little bit of money last year, but 3.5%. So even worse than Austrian, even worse than Lufthansa mainline. Now they say that the group says that one of their top priorities going, you know, forward in 2024 and beyond is they want to work with United, you know, whom they have a joint venture across the Atlantic, to generate more North America to Africa flows through Brussels. So that'll be interesting if they can pull that off, because Africa could be, you know, it tends to be a very high yield market. There actually is more demand than you might think between, for example, North America and Africa, a lot of, you know, migrant traffic, a lot of natural resource traffic, even, you know, I remember back when I worked for Air France many years ago, we had a lot of World Bank traffic flying between, you know, let's say Washington, Dulles, and, you know, a lot of African capitals. So they're going to try to get more of that. We'll see. Okay. But so far, yeah, not terribly successful for the group. And then what'd you ask me? Eurowings? That's Eurowings.
Yeah, let's go for Eurowings.
Eurowings has been a lot of headaches for the group. And they originally started a low-cost short-haul carrier thinking, okay, we need to do something because, you know, EasyJet is eating our lunch and Ryanair is eating our lunch and we got to defend our turf. And they've changed the business model of Eurowings about 1,000 times. And they've had all sorts of different operating certificates with different labor contracts. And, you know, there was a German Wings and then, you know, now is it Eurowings and this Wings and that Wings. And now there's Discover, which is part of Eurowings. So they've never really been able to find the right formula for Eurowings. And that's been frustrating. Now they say finally that it's doing well. Actually, Eurowings had an 8% operating margin last year, which is pretty good. I mean, that's, you know, that's very solid. They did, during the earnings call, they did point out that a lot of that success was specifically from an airline that you actually, I believe, mentioned before, Gordon. That's Sun Express, which is a joint venture.
The joint venture, exactly.
The joint venture, right, with Turkish Airlines. And Turkey's tourism, Turkey has just been, you know, booming like crazy the last year or two. And so Sun Express did very well. And that apparently is all of those profits are booked as part of Eurowings. You can see how complex the accounting gets with all these different operating units. But Sun Express kind of gave Brussels a little boost there. Or sorry, gave Eurowings a little boost there. Now Eurowings the core Eurowings, you know, flying short haul within Europe, that probably, you know, they didn't break that out specifically, but you'd have to assume that that's, you know, more on the weaker side. So I think we covered all the major airline units, unless you want to, you know, count ITA, which is in flux, but, I think we covered a lot there.
We sure did. Thank you for those insights as always, Jay. Stay with us. In part two, we are going to be picking some of the themes from the JP Morgan Industrials Conference, which is taking place earlier this week in the US, and seeing what the major trends are from the US airlines. Stay with us. Hello and welcome back to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. This week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat. In part one, we've been discussing Lufthansa Group, the many, many, many different faces of the Lufthansa Group. And now we're turning our attention to North America, to the US in particular, Jay, because we've had a big event in New York this week, the JP Morgan Industrials. And really, for those that aren't aware, this is an opportunity for various analysts, market watchers, and other industry insiders to come together to talk shop. And sometimes, just sometimes, you get a little bit more color about a particular company's plans. And we've had that with a few of the major US airlines. Jay, what was your take?
Yeah, whole lot of great information to come out of that conference. It's a particularly good conference. It's because pretty much everybody in the US, all the major airlines are there, and tends to be, you know, the highest people, the chief executives, chief financial officers. In fact, I believe of the 11 major US airlines, and when I say I'm excluding SkyWest, which is a regional airline, but the 11 sort of publicly traded scheduled airlines. Of all 11, I believe the only ones that did not present were Allegiant, Spirit, and Hawaiian. And it's too bad. We would have loved to have heard from Spirit, given some of the trouble we have now. But yeah, we didn't get any new gossip there. But we did hear from JetBlue. We did hear from pretty much everybody else. I just want to share a couple of figures and facts that I thought were interesting, if I may. So in 2019, so last full year before the pandemic, the three most profitable U.S. airlines by operating margin were Allegiant, Delta, and Spirit. 1, 2, 3. In 2023, the three most profitable airlines were Sun Country, interesting, Delta, and Allegiant. Okay, so Delta is the only one that Delta stayed where it was in second place. Allegiant is still in the top three, but they declined a lot. Actually, they went from 20% to 10%, so big drop. The real stars of the industry right now, you have to say, are Delta and United. Now Sun Country, yes, maybe, but they're a little bit of a sideshow because they're so small. But Delta and United are really thriving. And they, each of those airlines, their respective CEOs talked about why, and, you know, no real surprises. We know that international is booming. There's the premium is booming. There's different reasons, that we've talked about before. Now, one of the themes of this conference is that there's definitely, a lot of repercussions from all of the drama happening at Boeing. So Boeing is just not delivering these MAX jets on time. And it's really messing with a lot of different airline business models. And we can, you know, go through a few different examples, but, you know, several of these airlines have stopped hiring because they're not getting as many planes as they want. Several of these airlines are seeing their unit cost, higher than they expected, because here they are thinking, oh, we're going to bring in these, you know, new MAXs with low unit costs, but we're not getting them, so we have to keep these older planes with higher unit costs. Some of the airlines here affected are not able to adjust their networks to the extent that they like. So we're seeing a lot of that throughout the industry. So.
We sure are. Southwest was one of the big carriers presenting yesterday, as we're speaking here on Wednesday, and they were pretty blunt. They said that they expect to end 2024 with fewer employees on a year-on-year basis, and it previously said its headcount would be flat compared to 2023. We should stress some of that will be retirements, natural attrition, but it is after a period of really incredible growth in the post-pandemic years to have this quite sharp slowdown. And even if it is just getting flat and not negative in terms of job growth, it is still notable.
It is. And I should add that the Southwest, this was an airline that in 2019 had a 13% margin. In 2023, they had a 3% margin. So they have issues. The MAX being probably one of the most severe problems that they face. But, you know, frankly, they have network problems too. They admit that their network is probably not well designed to meet some of the changes in demand that have, you know, taken place since the pandemic, and they're working to change that. They have some cost issues. They have very expensive new labor contracts now. So Southwest is an airline that's whose future is certainly not in doubt. I mean, it's an airline with an incredibly strong balance sheet still, but it is an airline with strategic challenges for sure.
Yeah, we got some new numbers out of Southwest at the JP Morgan Industrials. They've been told by Boeing to expect 46 Boeing 737-8 deliveries this year. That's down from the previous expectation of 58, a deficit of 12, not eye-watering on a fleet of 600, but it's the 737 MAX 7s that you mentioned, Jay. The airline was previously expecting 21 to be delivered this year. It's now slashed that figure to zero. And the 7s obviously being a broad like-for-like for the 737-700 classics that are still flying with Southwest. Let's look a little bit at JetBlue as well, because their new CEO, Joanna Geraghty, she was presenting at the conference, and she insisted that her goal is to return the business to its fundamentals. And I thought it was really interesting. She said, and I quote, "We've got to fully leverage our unique position in the market," that's JetBlue, that is, "and with 3 years of distractions associated with the NEA and associated with Spirit, we've got a lot of work to do." Really interesting that, we're only talking barely a week after the merger, or the planned merger, was formally broken off, calling that a distraction, and the Northeast Alliance as well a distraction. It looks like things are going to become a little bit more focused under Joanna Geraghty.
Yeah, there's really no other choice but to regroup and just how to consider how this airline is going to make it organically and find a way to make money. It has not made a profit since the pandemic. There are four airlines actually where that's true, four U.S. airlines. It's Frontier, JetBlue, Spirit, and Hawaiian. All of those made perfectly acceptable profits in 2019. I mean, JetBlue was almost last in the industry, but American was the only one that was worse in 2019. But still, it was their margin was 10%. It was just a very good year for the industry. Now they, you know, last year they barely lost money. I mean, it was just below break even, but red ink nonetheless. I like to joke that JetBlue, when they hear their six letters that they give the management team nightmares when they hear these letters, it's one is so GTF three letters and then another three are ATC, and GTF, as you know the geared turbofan engines, which the engines that are requiring they're just causing so much ground time for their A321 and Neos. That's causing tremendous amount of headaches for JetBlue, and then ATC, referring to air traffic control, which has just been a terrible nightmare, and particularly in their airspace, New York, Boston, Florida. They've got their share of problems to work out, and they were hoping that they could address some of them through scale. You know, be it this, I guess NEA would be another three letters that give them, the
share. We should be running these alliance. Down.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there any three letter acronym that we can assign to the failed Spirit merger? I don't think so. But any case, that's another thing that they every time they hear they shake. But a lot of bad news and adverse developments in the JetBlue story over the past year or two, and it just remains to be seen how they're going to pull themselves out of the hole. They've introduced some ideas. They said they're going to cut some of their money losing routes. They said they're going to sort of double down on their New York leisure traffic. They're looking for more ancillary revenues. They have this JetBlue Vacations and, sort of auxiliary businesses. So they have some ideas. I think they're going to give some more detail at an Investor Day presentation, which I believe is later this spring. I have to double check that, but they'll come up with some more, answers to the questions that a lot of investors are asking right now.
So much more we could discuss around the JP Morgan Industrials Conference. And I'm sure we will have more insights on that in the upcoming issue of Airline Weekly. And next week, Jay, give us a little exclusive. It's going to be Lufthansa themed. Is that right?
Yeah, the upcoming issue will have a feature story on some of the Lufthansa topics we discussed today. We didn't even discuss the whole IATA/Alitalia.
That's too good a topic for just a little segue. We need a full 30 minutes for that, I think.
Right. Well, we'll leave that for our readers, the Airline Weekly readers. And just a little bit more about how Lufthansa hopes to right the ship with their, some of the mainline issues that we discussed, and, some of the other ideas they have in mind. We didn't even talk about also their labor unrest, which they've experienced a lot of this year so far. So a lot that we didn't touch upon that we'll certainly cover in more detail in the issue.
Absolutely. Airlineweekly.com is where you can get more information about the Airline Weekly issue. If you want to subscribe or if you want to have a free trial, take a look at that. And don't forget, you can always contact us via email. Our address is airlineweekly@skift.com. And my thanks to Jay for joining me this week. And wherever you are in the world, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Check out airlineweekly.com for a new issue every Monday and updates on the latest airline news throughout the week.